7BR Part Heard. Hello, and welcome to 7BR's Part Heard, the podcast that traverses the legal landscape, examining issues across multiple practice areas, guided by the diverse expertise of our members. I'm Rhys Palmer, Chambers Paralegal. I wish to welcome today to the podcast Ross Beaton, who is here today to discuss reforms in coroner's courts in light of the recent report from the House of Commons Justice Report. Ross specialises in personal injury, clinical negligence and inquests. He has appeared as counsel at numerous inquests across the country, almost always representing the family of the deceased. He also frequently advises on potential civil claims for damages linked to the inquest where he appears. Ross, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Rhys. Good morning.
The topic of today's discussion stems around, as I've just said, the House of Commons Justice Committee report, which was published on the 27th of May of this year, 2021. The report covers various topics such as the role of pathology, local funding, legal aid, etc. And of course, we can't cover all of these in this podcast today. But I just thought, before we go into one or two of these topics, could you just provide to our listeners what the headlines of the report were, the findings and the conclusions and recommendations that were put forward?
Yeah, certainly. So the House of Commons Justice Committee have carried out an inquiry into the coroner's service across England and Wales, or the various coroner's services, which are locally delivered across England and Wales. Over the last year or so, they've interviewed various people from the then chief coroner, the now chief coroner, through to members of families, NHS trusts, ministers, and they've made a number of recommendations. I know we'll come on to talk about a couple of the key ones, but as you say, it covers a wide range of areas. They look at improvements made since the Coroners and Justice Act 2009, which is the law which we work under at the moment. The Ministry of Justice actually did conduct its own review in 2015 of the effectiveness of the Act over the 2 years since it had been brought into force in 2013. It's never published that review. So one of the key recommendations was that it should publish that review. There are other things such as the need for increased funding, increased provision of pathologists. Pathologists are the people who conduct postmortems. There are actually not that many of them across the country, and the number seems to be falling. So they recommend doing something about that. Various steps for increasing the access of bereaved people, the effective access of bereaved people to the evidence in inquests. So the position in law is that if you're the next of kin, you have special status in an inquest, you're an interested person, you're entitled to have notice of the hearing, have access to the evidence, etc. The position, in fact, is that where people are not represented, they don't always know that. They don't always get access until the day of the hearing itself, if even then, to papers which the coroner has obtained. So making recommendations around improving the effectiveness of participation. They recommend a national coroner service for England and Wales, rather than local delivery, perhaps unlikely to happen, but they're not the first people to recommend it. And then, of course, there are other specific matters that we'll come on to.
So one of the topics that I read about was the legal aid and sort of access to funding. It's a topic that always comes up when we talk about anything law and court related. How does legal aid work in an inquest, and what steps does a person have to undertake to obtain it?
How does it work? It doesn't, is the short answer. What steps does a person have to take to obtain it? Well, often none that they actually can undertake. There's a basic principle in inquest that they're said to be inquisitorial, clues in the name, not adversarial. Now, it's often then said by government ministers, still said, that because the inquest is inquisitorial, the coroner's asking the questions, people are not in there to vindicate their civil rights. There's not going to be a finding of civil liability. There's not going to be a finding of criminal liability. In fact, there can't be either of those findings because they're precluded by the law from being made in inquests, that there's then no need for legal aid. Of course, it's one thing to say that an inquest isn't adversarial and that the coroner will facilitate participation and ask all the questions. And it's quite another thing to come to an inquest if you're a bereaved family and see that there are several parties, whether it's NHS trusts, prisons, the Ministry of Justice, etc., who all themselves feel the need to have and pay for legal representation. families often feel, well, why are we the only ones who don't have that option? So that's a view which very much the Justice Committee went along with. They think that legal aid should be extended. At the moment, legal aid is only available in exceptional cases. As part of the Justice Committee's investigation, they heard from a number of charities. One of them was AVMA, which is a medical accidents charity. Lisa O'Dwyer, who's one of the key people at AVMA, said, well, it says exceptional in the law, and it really does mean exceptional, as in there are very few cases that we've been able to find where people effectively have access to legal aid. So you effectively only get legal aid if your income is below about £2,500 a month and you've got about £8,000 or less in your savings account. I don't want to give exact figures because the figures shifted a bit from year to year. They're likely to shift again, but it's that sort of level. And even then, you wouldn't get legal aid in most inquests unless there was what's called Article 2 engaged. So the inquest was looking at either a death in custody or some sort of systemic or alleged potential systemic failing, which went beyond the individual case. Or if there was a determination made by the legal aid agency that the case was exceptional for some other reason. So a major national disaster, Manchester Arena bombing or something like that. So when we say it's exceptional, it really is exceptional.
And then another concern that was raised in the report was that of prevention of future deaths. Part of the role of a coroner is to make a report in this regard. Is that correct? And if so, could you just explain again how this works in this context?
Yeah, sure. So it's been long established that coroners would consider issues of risks of future death occurring in similar circumstances or the same circumstances as the death which they are dealing with occurred. That's something which coroners did for a very long time anyway. The Coroners and Justice Act 2009 made that a duty. So if a coroner has reason to believe that the circumstances which led to the death which they're looking at still exist at the time of the inquest, then they have a duty to make a report. It's called a report to prevent future deaths. They send it to whichever organization or individual they think has the power to prevent those future deaths, to take action. So, for instance, if you were dealing with a hospital where there were ongoing issues of lack of staff or lack of training or lack of capacity in the A&E unit or whatever it was, and the coroner thought that those issues were still there when the inquest was being heard, the coroner might write to the medical director at the trust. That person would then be obliged to respond. It's usually the coroner writes within 28 days and they have to respond within 28 days. Doesn't always work that way in practice, but in principle, that's how it works. And then these reports and their responses are collated by the senior coroner, so centrally, and can be published online, and increasingly are published online. What there isn't, though, is an effective database of them. And what there certainly isn't is any central collation of cases where a coroner doesn't make a report because, say, an NHS trust comes along with an action plan, presents the action plan to the coroner. This happens in virtually every medical inquest. There's an action plan presented by the trust, which they've worked up internally. And the coroner says, well, I don't need to make a report because you are learning lessons internally already and I approve of what you're doing. That doesn't get reported anywhere. And that's something which families are often concerned about. They often say, well, the reason that we're here, one of the key reasons that we're here, is that we don't want what happened to our loved one to happen to anybody else. And so the report makes a few recommendations around learning from prevention of future death reports, central collation of them, proper follow-up, some centralized mechanism for following up that the things which are supposed to have been done actually get done.
And you've touched upon sort of the question that I was going to ask following up from that one, and that is, we have these reports that are made or trusts and bodies provide these action plans. How do we ensure that these, or how do we know and can be certain that these are actioned and followed up, that there are lessons learned and we see a demonstrable response to this report?
Well, at present, in practice, the way that often works is that it's coroner services are delivered locally by county, local authority area. So often you will see the same coroners dealing with the same hospital trusts, dealing with the same prisons. So there's a level of personal knowledge there. And particularly where you have sort of quite a lot of large counties in England, which will have a senior coroner and several assistant coroners. And you'll often have, there'll be one of the assistant coroners who deals with all the maternity cases. There'll be one of the assistant coroners who deals with all the police station death cases, etc. So they get a very strong personal knowledge of what's going on in those settings locally, what the issues are locally. And if they've made a report previously, or they've been given an action plan previously and not made a report, and then they see the same issues coming back the next year in their court in another case, they're the ones who follow up. Now, what the Justice Committee recommend is a much better centralized system. And this is something which senior coroners such as Andre Ribello, who's coroner in Liverpool, he's one of the most experienced coroners in the country, probably. They recommend having a centralized database so that you could go, for instance, and search for deaths by theme. So road deaths, pattern of them across the country. Are there particular issues which are more common in one part of the country than another? Are there particular types of road which are more dangerous than others? And learn lessons nationally. We're not able to do that at the moment. In Australia and New Zealand, apparently they have a much better system. That's something which the Justice Committee has recommended should be brought in, ensure that risks to public safety are freely available online, what actions are being taken freely available online, properly searchable database to allow lessons to be learnt nationwide, and researchers to use this information to make improvements. And that's one of the key things in the report, which has been very much welcomed by organisations like AVMA, which I referred to already.
And were there any other recommendations in the report in relation to this?
In relation to the prevention of future deaths, that system of follow-up, the potential use of regulators and a potential national inspectorate of coroners, which is another thing which the committee recommends, which perhaps seems unlikely to be done because it's been recommended before and not been done. That sort of follow-up, yes, is recommended. But of course, they've also dealt with a wide range of other areas, as we've touched on. They've made recommendations around dealing with, there's a huge backlog in coroner's cases, which is growing, and they've made recommendations to reduce that, try to reduce that coming out of the pandemic. But of course, a lot of that comes down to recommending that there be more resources.
Of course. And as you said, there have been many reports on this before and many recommendations made, and little change we've seen actually come through with this. Just finally, was there anything else that you wanted to highlight that was of interest in the report from your perspective?
Yes, actually there is. And it's something which is almost a footnote to the report, but it's important to many people, and certainly it's important to some of the families who I deal with, which is the issue of stillbirths. So we've had coroner's inquests for coming on 1,000 years in some form or another, and they have always dealt with death of somebody who is legally considered to have been alive. That seems like the sort of answer that lawyers would give. And might be the punchline to some sort of bad joke, until you realise that it excludes babies who haven't taken their first breath. And that's something which causes distress to parents around the country, to see arguments as to whether an inquest can be held into a particular case, arguments about whether a breath was taken or not. One wonders what the use of these arguments is. And in fact, the government have previously consulted on bringing stillbirth within the remit of the coroner service. So in 2019, they had a consultation. The suggestion was to bring in deaths after the 37th week of pregnancy. So where child has been alive in the womb and for whatever reason has died in the womb after 37 weeks, that a coroner should be able to investigate that. And, you know, what sort of things would the coroner investigate? It would be the maternity care, the medical care provided to the mother, that sort of thing, which is of real importance, obviously. So there's already been that consultation, which is why it's a footnote in this report. It's supposed to be the subject of another report. The problem is that nothing seems to have happened with this since 2019. The Ministry of Justice doesn't seem to have done anything about it. The consultation's happened. We don't know what's happened since, if anything. And so the Justice Committee say, look, you've got to do something about this. You've got to revive this consultation or publish the consultation if you've finished it and put forward some proposals for reform. It's just not acceptable that parents in this situation, or who may find themselves in this situation in the future, don't even know what the government's proposals are. So a small issue from the perspective of this report, but a bigger issue for sadly probably a larger number of parents around the country than we know. And one of the reasons that we don't have those numbers is that the cases don't come to coroner's inquests.
Well, thank you, Ross. That's quite an interesting point that I hadn't picked up myself when reading the report. It's definitely something that I'll be looking out for in the future. Thank you for joining us today. It's been a pleasure having you on, as always.
Thank you.
Thank you to our listeners. If you enjoyed this week's episode and Ross's thoughts and opinions, you can find more like this and more from Ross in his two-part series where he discusses what a COVID inquiry might look like on Chamber's website. Until next week, thank you and goodbye.